This episode of DLC is brought to you by Alienware. So I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Yeah, there it is. When you hear those three letters, you know your day's getting better. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
DLC.
Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're recovering from a Father's Day weekend. I don't know. Maybe you were treating a father. Maybe you are a father. Maybe, you know, whatever it is, we're going to be with you in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness. Because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. They bring the show to you through their generosity, their support, their belief in what we're doing over here. And boy, are we grateful. In exchange, in return, in gratitude, they get a lot of really cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a whole bunch of bonus content. You got spoiler chats. You got the feeling this show. Oh my gosh, third season coming soon. Two seasons already there waiting for you, with Christian Spicer and Alex Solman talking about the feelings behind video games. Plus, at a certain level of support, boy, you get that Wednesday show, which people certainly love. We call it paid DLC. It's where Lana Bashinsky joins us to talk about all the wacky stuff happening in the middle of the week, including patron comments and stories. Oh, it's good fun. All of that can be yours by visiting our Patreon at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, that's the show all about games in the many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy I look up to as a dad, other than my dad, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Look up to as a dad. That was my dad's name. Call me Billy.
Billy.
Hello, Jeffrey. Happy, we are recording this on Father's Day.
Yeah.
I have my, for video folks, I'm wearing my Dodgers giveaway beach hat.
Yeah.
They won, but it came at a cost. Mookie Betts, hit by pitch, broken wrist, gonna be out for a bit, so I will wear this beach hat until he comes back.
Oh no. Have you looked up how long broken wrists take?
Minimum 6 weeks.
That's a stinky hat. About to be a stinky hat.
I'm sleeping in it too. It's very stiff. You know, yeah. It's gonna be
Yeah.
But I'm here for you. Know it. What? I'm here for you, Jeff. I'm here for you.
Appreciate your fandom. We got a big show for you. We got so many games to talk about. You know, it was just Summer of Games, Summer Game Fest. We're going to hit on that a little bit more. We did double episodes last week. Hope folks enjoyed that in their feeds. But really, even two episodes in 1 week wasn't enough to contain it all. So we got Overflow this week. We got so many. We got Steam Next Fest games to talk about. There's only 1,800 plus game demos last week to dig into. So, you know, we got a few we liked. And we have, ladies and gentlemen, one of our favorite guests. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, once again, DLC stands for Dominant Leader of Coverage. Because we have the undisputed number one games journalist, our friend, Imran Khan, is back with us. Hey, Imran.
Hey, I love how energetic this like some podcasts you start in, it starts like an NPR kind of opening, like, hi, I'm Steve Inskeep, this is the whatever video game job. This one, like, you come in like a pro wrestling match. You come in like you're walking down down the
Take that as a compliment, sir.
Just wait till you get a folding chair to the back. That was episode 4 for me, and I'm, you know, ooh, this is rough.
I do a heel turn on Christian every single week. But I got to say, in all due respect, Steve Inkeep's video game podcast is phenomenal.
I would listen to it. I would. Like, my wife has been on NPR to talk video games. She says hi, by the way.
Oh,
she's been on there a couple of times to talk about with their video game stuff for NPR. And sure. Every time she's like, that's a great podcast. They actually really know what they're talking about. Let's get Stephen Keep. Let's get All Things Considered Terry Gross up here too. Let's get them to talk about which Mortal Kombat is the best Mortal Kombat.
Mostly Kai Rizdale, though, right? We got to get that marketplace.
You know. How about a little Nina Totenberg up in here? I want a little Nina Totenberg up in my video games coverage.
I think we just need a video game themed Wait, Don't Tell Me.
That's right. There you go.
But by the laws of podcast, we've said all their names. They're now obligated to appear on our podcast. I think that's how it works. Is that?
By the way, this is why I've always known that I could never be on NPR. It's because my last name is not ridiculous enough to be on. It has to be, Inskeep.
I don't think that's ridiculous, amazing. Just interesting. It has to be
interesting
and fun to say. And
yeah.
I think Kanata follows those rules. Like, you can.
I wish. Anyway, we will do our best. I definitely put us more on the WWE side than the NPR side. But you know what? You can pick three letters designation for us anytime. We'll use DLC. Oh, we got to get into it and start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send comments, questions, anything you'd like us to know. We love hearing from you, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. But that's not the only way. We also have a Discord. You can hang out there, talk with like-minded folks. It is 5x5 DLC on Discord. Join up, participate, hang out. It's good fun. But Imran, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Let's start with this Dragon Age one, because I actually had the chance to see this demo, so I have things to talk about with it.
Yeah, you were there at SGF, the Summer Games Fest. This happened, you know, we recorded, as I said, two episodes last week, and then right after that, the day after, Dragon Age, which made, of course, a big appearance in teaser form at the Microsoft presentation, came out and fully showed gameplay, a long stretch from several different moments in the game, 20 plus minutes of gameplay footage on Tuesday. And it is called Dragon Age the Veilguard. Comes some returning favorites, some characters I know very, very well from really enjoying the previous Dragon Age games, Varric, for example. So we got a bunch of kind of story content. We got a bunch of combat. And we got some follow-ups from developers talking about how the game is not going to be a traditional sort of open world experience in the way Inquisition tended to be. It is going to be a throwback to a more mission-based, focused kind of story narrative-driven experience. And Imran, I'm curious what you thought, A, of that revelation and also of the footage that they showed.
So, well, basically, I kind of snuck into a demo at Summer Games Fest that was not like supposed to be there. And I was like, can I just hang along? Because it was a hands-off demo. So what they showed there was, I think, as somebody who has been hot and cold on Dragon Age for years, I'm an old curmudgeon. I love the first one. I didn't much love 2 and 3. But
first one is so good. So underrated.
Yes. Yeah. I think the first one is maybe one of BioWare's best. And yeah, I find myself disagreeing with a lot of Dragon Age fans when it comes to like the later games. But this one, what I saw and what they talked about actually made me very much convinced of, oh, they at least get what is supposed to happen here. They at least get the task ahead of them. Because like initially I heard not a big open world like Inquisition. I was kind of bummed because I thought, well, they're taking a step back. But it does sound like they realize that just trying to do the same thing Inquisition did, especially, I don't know, you played Inquisition, right? Jeff?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I played it to completion. Yeah.
Did you do the same thing I did and spend hours in the hinterlands just moving on? Yes.
That was something I think I said on either this podcast, or I don't know how long ago it was, maybe on Weekend Confirmed at this point. It has been so long. But it was that was the biggest revelation, and I tried to shout it from the hinterlands, from the rooftops, from the mountaintops. Leave the hinterlands.
Yes.
Leave the hinterlands. That was the key to enjoying that game, because you get stuck. There's so much to do there. And you're like, oh, I got to complete everything. The game doesn't even really start until you get past that. But yes, I recall that very well.
Yeah, I think they've realized like, oh, if we just give people the chance to just go anywhere, that kind of screws with the pacing of a very narrative heavy RPG. So they're going back to something that they know works, the thing that worked in 1 and 2, and they're like following that. And the other thing they said was, so this is a little bit off the question you asked, but it was the thing that really like got me interested in what they were talking about. They have changed the name from Dreadwolf to the Veilguard.
Veilguard, right.
I think the Veilguard's the worst name, but they explained the name change. They were saying that, you know, the MCU kind of ran out of steam after Thanos, because Thanos was this big end goal for them. And Dragon Age has a similar thing where Solas is the end goal for them. If you spend the entire, like, this game just talking about Solas and all the things that he, like, I'll make the game about him, then after that's over, what do you do with it? How do you get people to come along to a new villain, a new idea, all those things? So I think they like renamed the game and changed the focus. I don't know if they changed it in development or like just kind of changed it publicly, but I think that shows a lot of perception for them of like knowing how the audience is going to follow along, because they're right. People did lose steam after Thanos. So I think basing this game on the idea of this is not about one guy, it's about a world, is a much smarter idea and actually got me much more interested in it.
All right. I think that's fair. I mean, I don't know how much people are, I don't know if people are as connected to the details of the Dragon Age universe as they were to Thanos, for example, but you know, I give them credit for that.
Right.
My biggest, I think the game looks gorgeous. I think what they showed, I like this idea of sort of a throwback to something closer to a, you know, Mass Effect, or even what they're doing with Final Fantasy games still. This much more focused narrative adventure that goes you from point A to point B. You can return to point A if you want, but you're kind of going through this progression. It's a campaign. It's not necessarily this big go anywhere, do whatever you want thing. I think that's cool.
Yeah, they want to tell a specific story, which is like good for them. Absolutely, do that.
Wonderful. And it looks like the story elements are very strong. And again, visually, I'm very delighted with how the game looks. I think a lot of people online have reacted this way too. I'm a little worried about just how hack and slashy it showed. You know, there are these moments they show in the comic. You're still in a party. You still have a group of people that you're ostensibly controlling. And they definitely showed these moments where you could pause the game and issue commands, you know, like you have in previous Dragon Ages, like you have in previous Mass Effects, but and cue, you know, big attacks and stuff. But my goodness, it is so much more on that spectrum of action, 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 you know, very hack and slashy, going between ranged, you know, archery skills and very flashy, almost, you know, Devil May Cry level attacks. It really feels like they swung that pendulum very, very far away from where this series started, which was, you know, trying to be much more of a Baldur's Gate kind of spiritual successor. And They've also done that with Final Fantasy. A lot of these games have moved away and gotten very, very action-y. And it's not the way I'd like to see it. And it makes me a little bit chagrined for where this is going. But I'm wondering what you did you say you actually got hands-on with it?
No one got hands-on, unfortunately. It was just like a demo you watched and like just talked with the developers a bit. I had the same concern. I still have the same concern because we were just talking about how Origins is like my favorite game in the series.
Yeah.
But like, I don't think any big publisher is going to be willing in the near future to give that kind of game a chance anymore, to give like a Baldur's Gate successor or a turn-based.
But Baldur's Gate 3 has made all the money and won all the awards.
I 100% agree. And I think like this game is going to be fairly and unfairly compared to Baldur's Gate 3 in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But like, the idea of a turn, like, I'm sure that twist the EA as the publisher's stomach a little bit, the idea of a turn-based major AAA game.
Yeah.
I can learn to live with it, but I think I would have loved if they hewed a little bit more traditionally. They're probably not going to anytime soon.
Christian, I'm curious what your thoughts are. I know you've enjoyed these more action-y Final Fantasies a little bit more than I have, and I think you're a big fan of that style of gaming in general. But I'm curious, I don't even know how much you were anticipating this game before the reveal.
I mean, very little. Dragon Age is a franchise to me that has existed and I've dabbled in, but for whatever reason, never hooked me.
Right.
It just never spoke to me. I don't know if I was getting that fantasy from other games at the time, or for whatever reason, it just never got its claws into me. What I find interesting about this kind of more action-y or more direct input combat in these RPGs is you need to do more than just offer direct input combat, because then I start comparing it to DMC or Bayonetta or Stellar Blade from this year or some of these games that do that really, really well. It's kind of like when action games put in light RPG mechanics and you're like, well, this makes the game worse. Like this little bit of RPGing, it's like, it's not necessary.
You haven't gone far enough that direction.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like I'm in menus for 5 minutes and Ninja Gaiden, I'm not saying Ninja Gaiden is like this, but it's like if Ninja Gaiden all of a sudden had to go in and like spend time thinking about how to interact with my party. Like, no, that's not what I'm here for. And so I'm curious with this Dragon Age, if the combat is exciting enough and varied enough from watching this gameplay trailer. The thing that stuck out to me the most was the repeated animations that you saw for the hack and slash. It was a lot of, I don't have the exact name right, but it seemed kind of like a strike and then a windmill kick as like kind of a basic attack that the character would do. In a lot of games, they do have characters have a basic light attack or heavy attack. But then in, for example, Final Fantasy 16, those things become flourished and you get to add to them and do this really cool chain where the combat itself becomes visually spectacular. And from this trailer, I didn't see it go that far. So I don't know if that's a good thing for folks like you, Jeff, or if it's a bad thing for folks like me, but I do wonder when you're trying to thread a needle, you have to also then walk that tightrope, to use two different thread-based metaphors.
Sir, this is a very, very tiny thread and a needle. Can you step off of it, please?
It's actually very big because it's very easy to balance on, so the needle is just massive.
Just an enormous needle. Okay. I appreciate it. I'm so torn because I want to love this. I got so excited. The opening shots and – you know, what they showed at the Xbox conference, it just looks so great. And I love these characters and I really love this world. And I've enjoyed these games very much. And what I love, and I'm sure Imran, you'll back me up on this, is that Dragon Age Origins level of thinking. I'm thinking about what I'm doing. I'm making big decisions. The reason that game still remains one of my favorite console RPGs ever is how many times I set the controller down and was wrestling with a decision in that game, was really thinking about which of these major factions I was going to side with, or, you know, these big swinging story moments that weren't, are you going to be the Paragon or the Vanguard or whatever it was in Mass Effect? Are you going to be the good guy or the bad guy? It was shades of gray. It was very difficult, nuanced, both decisions mean somebody suffers and somebody wins, and you got to figure out where your value system is. That's what made that game so juicy and fun.
Yeah, I really do think that game was like BioWare. That was the game that defined BioWare for a generation for me. And like, yeah, there was an extent to which, as much as I loved Mass Effect, Mass Effect kind of lost what I liked about those games. Like, I liked about BioWare games in general.
Yes.
And I keep hoping that maybe Dragon Age is going to be the game that brings it back, but maybe no game is going to bring that style of what I loved about BioWare back. And I'm kind of just making peace with it. Cause I watched this footage here, and I watched it at Summer Games Fest, and it doesn't look unique. It doesn't look like this is you couldn't get this anywhere. You can get this from a dozen other games, but it's maybe not at this production value, but you can get like this exact same thing could be Genshin Impact for all it really matters. it's fun.
That's depressing.
I think it'll look good. It'll play good. It won't be that thing that I fell in love with 15 years ago or however long it was.
I suspect you're right. And I think that for me, the combat, the sort of flashy, quick, short attention span combat, and I don't mean to diminish it or insult people that like that stuff, because there are times when I like that stuff too. But what it looked like in this trailer, and again, it's a trailer, didn't have my hands on it, maybe I'll love it. I'm just saying my instinct in seeing it seems to indicate the combat as a representative element of the gameplay does not reinforce that decision making that I loved. And there is a way to do combat, see also Baldur's Gate 3, where the combat itself is reinforcing those notions of making really interesting decisions, making strong decisions, sitting in there and thinking about it. And when it's just this kind of high octane, just mash the button and you do flourishes and pretty stuff, I just don't think that indicates a design thesis that is what I'm hoping for from these games.
Yeah, I 100% like that. I am sure this game is what they want it to be, but yeah, I also wish what they wanted it to be was just a little bit more bold and out there.
It's going to be interesting because this is going to come out, relatively close to Avowed. I'm very much looking forward to both of them. I will certainly play this. I'm going to go in wanting to love it. I'm just a little worried. Been waiting for a Dragon Age for a very long time, and I want it to be great. And I wonder, Avowed, of course, also has real-time action-y combat. It just does it in that more Elder Scrolls style, which I do think is a little more, a little less twitch. It's a little more thinky, even if it's real time. But we'll see.
I suspect what will happen with this is it will come out and it'll feel a lot like Final Fantasy VII Remake and Rebirth in terms of the action-y parts. And then when you actually really do want to get down deep into it, you do use those menu commands. And like at some point, the difficulty level will demand you to. But like, Just looking at this, I'm reminded more of Kingdom Hearts than I am of Final Fantasy.
Dragon Age, yeah. Well, there you go. Dragon Age Veilguard gameplay. I'd love to know what folks listening think about it as well. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
We're old. I'm old is my story of the week. It's not a story. everybody knows that. But
it's a much longer story than just a week.
it comes via Shovel Knight. Yacht Club Games had a little celebration for Shovel Knight, which I love and have raved about on this show many times over the years, that it's apparently celebrating its 10-year anniversary. Cough, turn to dust me. Like, I don't know how that was 10 years ago, but apparently it was. And they're coming out with the Shovel of Hope DX, the definitive edition of Shovel Knight, which I love the original Shovel Knight. Totally thinks the original is worth playing. But this definitive edition is really interesting because it adds stuff that you see in ROMs now, or like when you play a ROM via an emulator or some of these mini consoles with rewind and save states, which in my head, I feel like already existed in Shovel Knight, because Shovel Knight is very much a throwback to an SNES style, pixel graphic platformers type game. And now the way most people play those games are with rewind, save states, and these things that the Nintendo Switch Online version of them has brought to these games. So yeah. In my head, it's like, oh yeah, Shovel Knight already had that. It didn't, and now it does, which I think is cool. And I think it's especially cool because this version of it also has all the characters. A lot of the characters they introduced kind of piecemeal over the years and each character plays differently. And also a whole host of cheats and mods, basically, that I think make the save state and rewind that much more interesting just to tinker. Like, you can play the base game as you would, and then I think it's really cool to think about going in and kind of breaking it, air quote, to see what it does with this character, with this cheat. Does it make it easier? Does it make it harder? And really pick at the seams of what this game is. And I think that type of thing feels like a Criterion edition of a game, instead of getting like director's commentary or something like that, they're giving you the tools to really pick it apart and see how these levels were designed.
That's cool.
So I think that's awesome. And then at the end, they dropped us probably the bigger or more exciting news is that they are working on another mainline Shovel Knight game. And it was strongly hinted that it's 3D. The logo, the Yacht Club Games transitioned into a 3D, style logo, and they said this isn't just another sequel, it's a bold new adventure that will launch Shovel Knight into an entirely new dimension of gaming.
What could that mean?
Multiverse, clearly. We're not quite ready to unveil everything just yet. Rest assured, the game will bring electrifying action, richer mechanics, and all the timeless charm you expect from a Shovel Knight title. So I'm stoked. I mean, I hope this isn't announced too early, and now every, whether it's Switch Direct or any publisher Direct, I'm sitting there going, Silk Song, but I'm doing it for Shovel Knight.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of a new mainline Shovel Knight game, and I think it's super exciting that it seems like they're taking a risk and taking a chance and not just doing Shovel Knight 2, 2D platforming continued boogaloo. I am stoked.
Well, you think this moving to 3D is a good move, or you're just excited that it's anything different and bold?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a good move. We'll see. Right. I hope it is. I trust the team. I hope that they had an idea that really excited them. I'm curious. Is it going to be a collectathon? Is it going to be a Banjo-Kazooie like? I mean, Shovel Knight is a thing and has had so many different kind of peripheral games that have been different genres that I think it can kind of be anything at this point, right? Until they do 3 mainline Shovel Knight games, they haven't created a pattern for themselves. so I'm curious to see what it is, or maybe it's just a 2.5D style platformer and it's just 3D graphics now instead of a pixel art. But regardless, I'm stoked for another mainline Shovel Knight because there hasn't been anything even hinting at that for
Well, it feels Over like it just came out a couple years. Years ago. It was just a couple of years ago that Shovel Knight came out, right?
It's been constantly coming out is the thing. It's like they've been so like adding so much stuff to it that because of this definitive edition, like how that proves is how well like they're supporting this game. That said, I suspect that the reason they're coming out and talking about a new Shovel Knight now is I don't think what's the name of that game? Mina the Hollower is doing as well as they think, or in terms of coverage is doing as well as I think, because Shovel Knight was everywhere. Shovel Knight, I remember covering that game years and years ago, like, and with a lot of anticipation, because you would write like a weekly story about that game. Nowadays, I don't think anyone's writing much about Mina. Like, it's been hands-on a couple of places and just really hasn't broken through the same containment feel that Shovel Knight did.
And that's my bad too, because as part of that problem, guilty Exhibit A, they also announced a new trailer for that in this presentation. Was I going to mention that? No. I mean, it looks cool, but like, I'm here for Shovel Knight.
Yeah.
Give me that. Yeah. Keep shoveling that Shovel Knight my way.
It does. I mean, it kind of begs the question though, like, does Shovel Knight, Shovel Knight, I think, was the vanguard of a big indie renaissance in terms of games that are getting attention are getting attention on the same level as like big publisher backed titles. I wonder now, is that going, like, what does Shovel Knight mean in a world where that's common, that's normal?
That's a good question. Well, maybe that's why they have to go 3D. Maybe it's like it's no longer hip to be retro. It's like we, in order to be a little counter the indie, the indie mainstream, to use a nonsensical phrase, but the conventional indie game, maybe you got to do something a little more outside the norm. I don't know. It's be interesting to see when they actually announce it.
Exciting to see, and again, I'm assuming that this is something Shovel Knight is doing as well, but it's the equivalent of Nick at Night at one point, including Fresh Prince of Bel-Air in it, you know, or like you're listening to the oldie station and it's a pop punk song and you're like, wait, what? Turn to dust. But that stuff continues to grow. And I think it's kind of been fun to see, well, it has been fun to see what a retro indie is. Where you had like Valheim, it's like, oh, yeah. Well, it's so retro. And it's like, that's not retro. I played that kind of game when I was in college. Oh, it's retro. It's so retro. Yeah. Or like Penny's Big Breakaway is, you know, kind of Dreamcast aesthetic as looking to that for retro inspiration. Like retro inspiration doesn't need to be SNES style games anymore. And I love seeing that progression of, I mean, we're probably what, only 2 years out from some developer going, I'm going to make a retro game like Minecraft. And it's like,
I mean, a retro game way back in the, it's going to look like an Xbox One game.
We're already at the point like where Paper Mario Thousand Year Door does not look wildly different from the GameCube game, doesn't play particularly different, but it's everyone I know is playing that game because it's like, we have GameCube nostalgia at the moment, and those games hold up fundamentally just as well as modern games.
Good art direction. Gets you every time. All right. Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with my story of the week right after this. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace! Christian, people may not know why I yell Squarespace every time we say Squarespace, and it's because Squarespace was our very first sponsor on DLC way back when we started over 10 years ago. And we're still not just talking about Squarespace, using it ourselves, right?
DLCpod.com, Squarespace.
That's right.
You can find links to the show, merch, Discord, all that stuff. And you might be thinking, wow, I went to DLCpod.com. That site looks great. You guys must be real good at building websites, to which I will reply to you, Squarespace is very good at building websites, because not this guy, not me.
No, Christian has barely even seen a computer before. He doesn't know. Squarespace makes it easy. You know, they've got this completely personalized system. You can start a personalized website with their new guided design system. It's called Squarespace Blueprint. Choose from professionally curated layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or your business and optimized for every device. You can easily launch your website and get discovered fast with integrated optimized SEO tools so you can show up more often to more people and grow the way you want. And are you selling stuff on your website? Do you need to charge folks for things? Well, make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. You can accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay so easily. And in eligible countries, you offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Plus, if you have any need for content on your website, that's usually something websites need. Let Squarespace AI help kickstart or update that content on any website. You can do product descriptions, emails with Squarespace AI. Take it out of your hands. Let you do the work of that you could never get to on your own. Generates instant personalized results that know and show your brand identity. Explain what your site's about. Choose your tone and enter what you need to get. Short or long form text. No matter the placement, Squarespace AI makes it easier to go live, stand out, and succeed online. Squarespace, that's the place. If you need a website for your business, for your personal use, squarespace.com/DLC. You can go to Squarespace for a free trial right now. And then when you're ready to launch, use our URL, squarespace.com/DLC. You'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Again, squarespace.com/DLC. The promo code DLC at checkout gets you 10% off your first website or domain. Thanks to Squarespace for being the first and the longest sponsor of DLC. All right. You know, I could talk about something else that makes me feel old, and that is Metallica being in Fortnite. But, you know, Metallica likes money. I don't think it's a mystery. They're doing it. We don't need to talk about that. What I will use, because we got a lot of games to talk about, so I'm just going to make this brief. We got a listener-suggested party, or a listener-suggested story of the week from Jay Clark, who sent this into dlcfeedback@gmail.com. I did not know about this. Maybe you guys had heard about this. But a pretty cool thing. Jay Clark said, I saw this uplifting story about Helldivers 2, and I had to share. I know it's been a favorite among this show and gaming fans. The Helldiver 2 developers, Arrowhead Studios, issued two major orders earlier this week. Liberate the planet of Marfark, which could give access to a new stratagem for all players, or head to Vernon Wells to save the sick children trapped under the Super Citizen Annie's Hospital for Very Sick Children. This offered no reward. The Helldiver community rallied together and resisted the urge of new explosive toys in favor of saving the children. Because of this, Arrowhead made a donation to the real-life charity Save the Children. Some may think this is silly, since it's just a video game, but I was really moved by the community's actions. It's nice to see some good in humanity in today's world. And kudos to the devs for the donation and for keeping the game engaging through these major orders and updates. Thanks and keep up the great work on the show, Jay Clark. I just thought that was cool. I hadn't heard about it. I don't know if you guys had.
No, yeah, I hadn't heard about it. It's a fantastic uplifting story. Like, people chose a thing that uplifts everybody versus just uplifts themselves.
It just feels like the, you know, the perception of what gamers are as sort of, you know, I even said shortest attention span earlier in this episode. And I think a lot of people think that they're, you know, we are selfish and that you're sort of just sitting in your little room all day blowing things up. You don't care about actual people. And I love when there is evidence to the contrary. I like this.
Also, just another example of Arrowhead being a developer doing live service in such a refreshing and interesting way. I mean,
agreed.
I don't know what the ultimate lesson from Helldivers 2 will be for that Sony will take from it, but it seems like there's a lot of really good ones for them to latch onto for upcoming games. Because that game and that community and the developers, the way they interact with the community, the whole thing is just delightful. Awesome.
Agreed. I totally agree. And it's really fun to see this kind of genuine goodwill permeate into their community and sort of get reverberated back. And it's put things, good things out, good things come back. And, you know, let's keep that loop going. So kudos. And thanks, Jay Clark, for the heads up on this, because I had not seen this news. All right. We got a lot of games to talk about. So let's jump right in and get to our playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Imran, you were just at SGF. You've been playing tons of stuff. Where would you like to start?
Let's start with like, so the most prominent and like best maybe game I played at SGF was called Phantom Blade Zero. And that was the game that closed out the Summer Game Fest stream. It was the kind of muted color Chinese mythos warrior game that
Souls-like?
So, yes and no. If you look at it, you would think this is a Souls-like. If you try and play it like a Souls-like, you will die. It is, I think, maybe one of the first examples I would think of in recent times, at least, of a Ninja Gaiden-like. You're not like hopping up and down, like hopping off walls and stuff like that. What it does is, it is a game where it really rewards hyper-aggressiveness, and so basically, you are given two weapons at once and two abilities to dodge or parry things. And in doing so, you have to constantly be on the enemy, just constantly slashing at them, then switch your weapon so you can refill your stamina bar and keep slashing at them more, and then like parry and dodge away when the time comes to do that. Which sounds simple, but like the actual act of doing it feels... It's one of those things where if they didn't do it right, if they didn't get the controls, the timing, all that stuff exactly right, it would play terribly. But I was incredibly shocked to find out how well they tuned those controls. It is I would say, how big a fan are either of you of Sekiro?
Christian is a big fan of it.
Yeah, it is, love that game.
It most reminded me of like the actual way Sekiro plays, like the way that you lose the controller to screen interface essentially, and just have a direct connection to your brain, which is what that game essentially gets. I am not fully convinced yet. I played a short demo. The demo I think was just 3 boss fights essentially. There was nothing they showed me about going through a level, exploring things, all that stuff, which is going to be, I think, a fairly large part of that. It can't just be disconnected fights, because that would be actually kind of lame. But we will see how that game turns out when it turns out. But
we heard it's not coming until 2026.
Yes, it is a long way away.
That's wild that they're showing this much of it, getting hands on when it's that far off.
They seem to be very confident about, like, at very least the battle system, and they're right to be. Because I came away from it thinking, wow, this is possibly my game of the show, which I think it ended up being. But it's one of those games that has a ton of potential. They just have to make good on the rest of it now, which is probably a much harder thing than I'm making it sound.
That's amazing. I mean, last week, our friend Anthony Taramina was on. He was also singing its praises. It's hard for me to think about a game that's almost 2 years away. That's wild to me. Yeah,
absolutely. And I'm probably just not going to think about it until it's about time to come out.
Yeah. So what else were you playing at SGF?
At SGF, I played Sonic and Shadow Generations, which is so the Sonic Generations part of that is a like nearly identical release to its release 10 years ago. It's got better resolution. It's got a couple of like small quality of life changes, like you can do the drop dash from Sonic Mania now, things like that. But the Shadow part was interesting because it's clearly a new game in terms of like it's made for modern consoles. It is like more modern design, I think. It's like, so here's my theory. My theory is they were working on a Shadow game. And then they were, because they have Shadow in the movie this year. They have like other Shadow things. They're clearly like doing a marketing campaign around Shadow. And then at some point realized, we don't have time to make a Shadow game. Let's attach Sonic Generations to this. Because like there is so much, these Shadow parts go unnecessarily hard. So like the level I was doing was like the Space Ark Colony from Sonic Adventure 2. And in that level, you are like using Chaos Control to slow down missiles in time so you can jump off them and use those platforms. You are beating up a missile to throw it, like knock it back into a space fortress to blow that up. Like it's those Sonic, the criticism that Sonic kind of plays itself and flips it on its head. So you're like, yeah, if you think it plays itself, watch what cool things we can do. Mm. And then halfway through the level, the alien from Shadow the Hedgehog, which is part of this weird storyline that Shadow is actually an alien that was built by other aliens to take over the world. The thing they have not referenced in 20 years.
Right.
That thing shows up and starts turning the level from Space Art Colony to Radical Highway from Sonic Adventure 2. And like you're running through doing all these cool things while him and this alien are talking like back and forth about like him being sent for this stuff and all that. Anyway, it is incredibly cool, all that stuff. And then like I saw screenshots of it has the same so the hub area from Sonic Generations was the 2D plane where you like jump up to other levels and like go into a side mission. It is like a whole 3D hub inside Shadow the Hedgehog. So like again, I think they had something way more ambitious planned, but what they've got actually turns out to be very cool. And I came away from that being like, I like the Sonic game. That's weird. It's weird that that was one of the best things from Summer Games Fest. But that comes out in a couple of months. I'm actually eager to try it.
Christian, you're the big Sonic fan among us. Are you excited hearing Imran's praise?
This is the most praise I've heard for it. Or other, I guess, previews or part that I read didn't hint at this Shadow stuff being as interesting as it is. So when I first heard the announcement and saw it, I was kind of like, I feel like I've kind of been there and done that. Like, I think Sonic Generations didn't speak to me the way Sonic Mania did.
Fool me 12 times.
I will buy it on day one. I'm so fascinated by the Sonic franchise because Frontiers, I think, Jeff, we said on this show, I think I said something like it's the best six or seven I've ever played. You know, it was such a flawed game, but just so fun in silly, weird ways. And so I was hoping we'd see something from that, or, you know, what the evolution of that is. But it does seem like Sega kind of does one old, then a new, or two old, then a new, kind of this look back, port forward approach, which, for keeping a character relevant and making this perhaps the year of Shadow, I think makes a lot of sense. But I don't know if this is, you know, high on my list of must play Sonic titles for me personally.
I think the character is extremely relevant, and that has almost nothing to do with video games. I mean, if my 7-year old, Sonic is ubiquitous at his school. It's on backpacks, on T-shirts, on shoes. They have little characters, you know, people know the movies and the cartoons. I don't think it's because those kids are interested in the video game-ness of it. And that's wild to me, you know, that I don't think my son's peers are all like going home and playing Sonic the Hedgehog games. They're watching the cartoon or reading the comic books or whatever.
Like, if you compare the popularity of that series with like the game sales numbers, the game seems like a very small part of that Sonic franchise, like an extremely small part.
Unlike it's
with, like,
wild.
You compare it to like Mario. Mario games sell really well, even in the movie. Yeah. In the movie, does well, but like Sonic has a much bigger. He has like 15 TV shows and like 2 movies and whatever, and the games sell max out at like 9-8 million copies.
It's wild.
Thinking that kids these days view Sonic games as bad movie tie-in games. They're like, oh, yeah. They still make those bad movie tie-ins, the Sonic
game. Yeah. So what else is on your playlist, Imran?
Okay, so this is my disappointment at Summer Games Fest, was New World Aeternum. How much do you know about New World, the original game, the original MMORPG?
I mean, I played it at launch and then fell off rather quickly, but I played a fair amount of it at launch.
So this game is that exact quest list and all that environment, locations, all that, but behind a action RPG, and it does not work. It is, you start the game, and the demo they gave us is just the beginning of the game, and it was find a fish. To like go find this stone and this thing, go to fight 5 of these skeletons off this ship. It is an MMORPG with a Diablo style system, but like immediately it was exhausting to do all this. Immediately, like if they're couching it as like they're not saying the word remake, they're not saying the word port, they're not saying reimagining or new battle system or anything like that. But it is those things, and also somehow none of us, not the sum of those parts at all. And like, I went through that game and I was, or that demo, I should say. And I found a piece of equipment and said, okay, I should put this piece of equipment. And then I opened the menu. There were 17 slots or whatever for equipment and no optimize button. And I was like, I'm not going to sit here and figure out what it is I just picked up. I'm just going to keep going and just hope for the best. Cause like that demo didn't let you die anyway. And I just,
so it's as if they said, hey, we can no longer really sustain an MMO here, but we have all this content. We can put this out as a single player game. Is that the idea?
Pretty much. Yeah. It's like, it's very clearly we want to port New World to consoles, but we don't think an MMORPG works well on consoles.
So
we're going to just make this Diablo style, quote unquote remake. And I think, it's hard to tell from demos. This could have been an old build, whatever. This game comes out in October. This does not feel like a polished game that's coming out in October. Again, just a demo, could have been a build from a year and a half ago. Who knows? Right. But I'm like, I'm watching that cautiously. Because if you had told me, like, we're making New World, but we're making it as an action RPG, I would be on board at least to watch it. But now I'm going to be like, I'm going to see how this comes out. Because, like, it's like seeing a t-shirt you kind of like that just really dirty, and I'm curious like whether it comes out in the wash or not.
It's a shame because I think that's a really interesting idea or an attempt, but it also kind of reminds me of the real olden days where you'd get like what's the example, maybe even Diablo is the example, when it would come out on consoles. And they're like, this is not even the same game.
Yeah.
They just attempted to bring this PC experience that they couldn't do on a Super Nintendo. And we're trying real hard, but it's not the same experience at all. It just has all the worst parts of that experience.
Yeah.
You leave Mortal Kombat on Game Boy out of your mouth, sir.
Yeah. Well, that's too bad. That's New World Aeternum. Mm-hmm. Imran was not a fan. About anything else from SGF that you want to mention?
I played a little bit of Fatal Fury City of Wolves. That game is really fun. They're purposely going for an idea of, so it's okay to be casual at fighting games. It's okay to not have to go into the lab and learn new things every couple of weeks. Here's a fairly simple fighting game that still has that hint of complication to it. So like if you've tried Street Fighter and got knocked down, or like you're never going to be like Evo Caliber or whatever, it's all right to just play a game that you have fun playing. So like I played a couple of matches of that. I don't have like a strong like grasp of it yet, but I think that game looks good and plays well. This is an SGF, but I just reviewed The Rogue Prince of Persia for IGN. That review should be up on Monday or Tuesday. That's a fun game with really good mechanics. I think since the latest patch that came out last week, it is, yeah, I think, they really improved it from the early access launch. There needs to be more of it. That's just the only problem with it right now. It's still in early access. There's going to be more of it. It will at one point solve every single thing I complained about in that review. But I think if you're going to pick it up, you have to be really fascinated, right now at least, you have to be really fascinated in watching it grow. Because otherwise, there's no reason not to just wait until after early access is over.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's cool that they added a second biome, with that patch. Mm-hmm. And I think the game has such huge potential. It's just, it's got all the mechanical stuff feeling right, feeling good, feeling exciting. You know, this really cool kind of 3D world on a 2D plane thing that they got going on. I just think they nailed that. But it's hard. Christian and I were both kind of comparing and contrasting its early access launch with Hades 2 mm-hmm. early access launch. And it's hard when one of those is, it feels very polished and very almost ready to ship. And the other one is Rogue Prince of Persia.
Yeah. That's the thing. I compared it to Hades in my review because like Rogue Prince of Persia has bosses, but it's not like there's no interesting dialogue between you and the boss. And it wasn't until Hades I realized how important that is to a game, to like make me care about the fact that I'm in this constant time loop. Make me care that I have motivation to actually like get through beyond just what is admittedly really good gameplay.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's kind of unfair because the term early access can mean a whole sliding scale of things. And what it absolutely means is we're not done with this yet. Yeah. So
I'm 100% confident it's going to get, that game will be great one day. Yeah. Just not quite there yet.
Yeah. You've also been playing a game we had another guest on a couple of weeks ago raving about, Lorelei and the Laser Eyes.
Yeah, so that's not a co-op game, but my wife and I essentially co-op that together. My wife, who is very lovely, and if anyone disagrees, screw you.
no disagreement here.
we basically, she was running it because she does puzzles better than I do. She is a puzzle sicko. She just got through Animoa and found everything. She loves those kind of games. So having like the controller in one hand and the notebook in the other, like is her kind of game exactly. I also like sat there with her watching that game. If one of us didn't understand a puzzle, the other one did. So it was that kind of game. I genuinely think that's one of the most interesting and unique games this year.
Yeah.
I also don't necessarily know if I can recommend it to everybody because you really, especially toward the end of the game, have to be a real puzzle sicko to start figuring that stuff out because it gets very obtuse, very difficult to understand. The story is not spoon-fed to you at all. By the end of the game, we both kind of figured out what was happening, but for the most part, we were just kind of just, I don't understand this. I don't understand, like, how is this connecting to this? Did that mean this guy killed this person? What? And then we were doing our best to do it, but I think you have to have a certain open mind to just let the game be itself for a while through puzzles and story before it just, like, makes any sort of sense whatsoever. I recommend it to people who do want to be those people who sit there with a notebook and write things down and like try and figure out puzzles through there, because that's what the way the game is meant. There's not even a back button in the game. Every button does the same thing because they want you to have your right hand on the notebook. But like I think it's really interesting. I think like in a way it's also extremely beautiful because the game only uses three colors. It uses black, white, and red.
Yeah.
And like it might actually be my most visually arresting Switch game I've seen in a long time. But it is a hard, hard recommendation for 99% of people, I'd say. Like right. you have to be into it, or you have to marry and sit down with somebody who is into it.
Yeah, engaged doesn't even work, or dating. You need to get a ring on.
I'm very excited about this game, just not able to commit. Is it sort of a Obra Dinn level? Like, did you have experience with that game?
I also played Obra Dinn co-op way back when, and it's that kind of thing in that you are constantly moving forward with puzzles. It's significantly more obtuse.
Wow.
There are times where you are just not going to understand. So like the game is broken up into like several segments, and like you can do those segments in pretty much any order you want, which meant that like we assumed one section was end game because it was so far off from anything we could like grab onto in terms of like, what is this? And then when we actually like it was the only thing left, we realized, oh, we could have done this first. We just hadn't seen like there are doors that match with puzzle boxes that match with puzzles somewhere else, and that you have to like connect all three of those together and then search through like your notes and documents to find out like what one word connects these three things. Figure out how you solve this puzzle based on things that like look strange in the room designated to that puzzle.
That's intense, and I admire that. Admire people like your wife that can do that. And sometimes I'm like that, but my goodness, that's impressive.
It's from the people who made Sayonara Wild Hearts, so at very least you have to appreciate what a wild swing this is.
Indeed, very different games. That's Lorelei and the Laser Eyes. It's one of the things on Imran's playlist. Let's take another quick break, and we'll come back with more. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Alienware. So I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Christian Spicer, we both have lots of stuff on our playlists. Some of it overlaps. Some of it does not. Maybe you could do some of the stuff that does not overlap. We can do one of the things that does. And then maybe I was thinking we'd go back and forth swapping on Steam Next Fest demo recommends.
Sure. Sounds great. So I will start with a not overlap, but a game I have seen discussed on our Discord quite a bit from folks who are digging it and enjoying it like I am. And that is Star Wars Hunters, I am playing on iOS with my Backbone controller. It's also available on Switch. And what I find most I was going to make a joke about it being a hero shooter and how there aren't any of those anymore today. There are many hero shooters are a dime a dozen or about to be.
This just in, a new hero shooter got announced. Yeah.
While I was making a joke about there being hero shooters, we have 10 more hero shooters. But this is one of the first to release in this upcoming rush of new hero shooters that have been announced. And Star Wars Hunters is very much a hero shooter. It's also free to play. It's also, you know, leads on mobile. It has all the trappings of like a lot of cringe, I think, an eye roll, or you're going to be microtransactioned to death. It's going to be problematic in all those ways. And while I think a lot of that is true, and the currency and powering up a character and grinding to unlock new characters and all those things are definitely present, it is a very complete, fast-paced, quick round game that is just, I find myself jumping into time and time again when I have just a couple of minutes. I often have my Backbone with me, sometimes just in my car. If I'm the LA life, as I've talked about before, is often getting somewhere early, because if you don't, you're going to be very late depending on how traffic swings. And so you're somewhere early. I have a little bit of time. It's been running great on just my 5G, you know, cellular connection. And you get to get in and you're playing as Star Wars characters who aren't any of the characters from the movies or TV shows that you've seen, but they're all like, this is the Han Solo. You know, like there is a Wookiee, there is a Sith, there is a heavy stormtrooper. And so like there's the
two Jawas and a coat, right? Like a Vincent adult man kind of thing. Yeah, okay.
That are stacked on top of each other like a kid's cartoon, like Scooby-Doo. Yes. And it has a sense of humor like that, right? Like it is lighthearted and fun and quick in a way that I find very compelling. And I think it's super easy to recommend as a free-to-play game. I think you are able to, at least to the way I've been playing it, avoid a lot of those microtransaction, battle pass style, try to reach into your pocketbook and pull more money out of you approach, even though they are present in the game. It's not without them. But I think the core gameplay loop is fun enough that if you're playing, I'm playing fairly casually, but just to jump in and run a match and have fun, I think it nails the core mechanic of what a quick burst hero shooter can and should be. It's relatively small maps. It doesn't require that much coordination, which I find refreshing for that style of play where I don't have a headset on. I'm not talking to teammates. You're still able to have fun and get around. And it looks really good. Like they went for an art style. And I'm playing on mobile, which I do think performs better than the Switch version from what I understand. Like you can get a higher frame rate depending on your phone and a little higher res graphics. But it's very much a, you know, art-directed Fortnite-esque style graphic approach to a game that I think is timeless and interesting. And Star Wars Hunters, it was announced maybe last year, maybe 18 months ago. And I was kind of like, oh, I don't know. This seems like a mobile free to play, not really going to be for me. And I kind of forgot about it. And then it came out again without a lot of fanfare the day it released. It kind of just came, I think it was like the 5th or maybe it was the first day of Summer Game Fest. I think it just dropped live. Don't overlook it. Don't sleep on Star Wars Hunters. It's on mobile and Switch. And it is 100% free to play. Just know that your first few matches, you are not a god. They are botting.
You are
they
just two want you Jawas in a coat.
Yeah. Yes. No, they're doing the, we're going to make you feel real good by having you go against a bunch of bots. What I've heard is the way you can tell when you're finally playing with real players is when everybody's jumping, you know, in the lobby, like waiting to go. When the characters are just standing still.
When they are respectfully waiting for the match to start.
Yeah.
It's not a person.
Yeah, not a person. Look for the idiot antics, then you know they're people.
If you are in the lobby and not jumping around, you might be a robot.
Now they're going to update it, though, and make all the bots jump, and we'll be like, oh, no, we're in the Matrix. We can't tell. Star Wars Hunters, out now on Switch and mobile.
What else is on your playlist?
The other thing that we don't have in common, and my game of show from Summer Game Fest, is the Alan Wake Night City DLC was announced and released that same day. There is three chapters, and they're very short. I think the longest one took me just over an hour. So it's like 3 to 5 hours of gameplay, depending on how you engage in the world. It reuses locations and assets from Alan Wake 2, but my goodness, are they fun. It really leans into quirky, and Alan Wake 2 is already kind of weird, but this really even furthers that. Night Springs within the universe, very tiny spoiler, I think it was in the announcement. It is a TV show in that world, kind of like a Twilight Zone TV show. And the conceit of this DLC is that you are playing episodes of that TV show. But everything in this universe now is so meta that, you know, it's like written by the TV show episodes are written by Alan Wake within the world, within the title card that you see of the thing. But it's also referencing things that happen in the game that are supposed to be real life. And right. So there's no way that that's actually a TV show that exists in the world that talks about the world that reference. It's like it's all just
right.
collapsing in on itself like a black hole. But really, really fun and really interesting. And I love the way that they're getting even quirkier and weird with it. Each chapter you play as a different main character. I won't even say the characters for people who want to go in cold. The third one was by far my favorite. The last chapter, it does the thing that Remedy games do, I think, so beautifully. Whether it's the ashtray maze and Control or the big musical moment in Alan Wake 2, it just continues to surprise and change itself as you go through it. And to see that level of creativity in these small kind of bite-sized moments, absolutely, absolutely incredible. I don't think this will convert folks like, oh, I'm going to buy Alan Wake 2 to now play these expansions. It's not for you. I am an Alan Wake sicko, to jump on the sicko bandwagon, and it is for me. It is for people like me that can't get enough of it. The only issue I had with it is when I first played the first chapter, you're doing a very pedestrian thing, is like your objective. And I'm doing it, and then the screen cut to black, and then it came up again, and I was at a different location.
Yeah.
And it kept telling me to do the same thing, but I literally couldn't because I was no longer at that place. And it ended up being a very big game-breaking bug.
But the game is still meta. You're like, maybe this is part of it.
Yes, and I got to a point. I get to a point where you have a couple of dialogue choices, and I'm talking to this character, and it says like, "You can't stop me," and your choices are like, "I'll stop you." I think it's like with love or with my shotgun, and I'm carrying a coffee pot, and I say, "I'm going to stop you with my shotgun." And my character takes a coffee pot and moves it up and down as it's like the cocking animation. Again, it's totally glitched, but in the world it works. So I take this coffee pot up and it goes ch-ch-ch, and it cocks. And the other character goes, "Oh, that is a shotgun." And I'm like, "Oh, this is amazing. This is so meta and folding in on itself in all the coolest ways." And it turned out, no, the game just glitched me. I didn't have a shotgun. I couldn't get past this part. I had to do a hard reset and reset all my progress. But in the moment, I was like, this is going deep.
That's good game design. When your bugs seem like features.
That's the problem with that style of game, when you're like, it's like Eternal Darkness, right? If that game did actually crash on you, beautiful. You can't finish it. Genius game design. But I love
it. If your bugs seem like features, you might be an Alan Wake game.
You might be a Remedy Entertainment Sam Lake joint.
a lot of Jeff Foxworthy on the show tonight.
Highly, highly recommended. If you loved Alan Wake 2, it's a quick, you know, sit down afternoon snack to get through all three, and each one gets better and better.
Very cool. Night Springs. It's a cool drop during the show. Neat to have them even do that.
Yeah.
You and I both been playing a little of that Destiny 2, the final shape. In fact, patrons got treated to us, I would say, representing the highest level of skill ever recorded by players of a video game.
Dominating. There's a VOD on Patreon for patrons, and there's a sweet moment in it, Jeff, when I was re-watching it and putting it up. That's really awesome. You go. I love that they've really committed to the platforming still. I love seeing that. Cut to 40 minutes later, Jeff going, dang it!
Ah! Why do I keep falling?
I died again.
Yeah, there's
you set yourself up nicely.
A lot of me falling off of stuff to show my supreme skill at FPS platforming. But we played together. We played one of the later missions in.
We played the penultimate
shape.
Mission. Yeah, you jumped in and we laid waste, my friend. It took us a bit, but we laid waste.
We did. It was pretty fun. It was a little frustrating at times. I felt like the game, as you pointed out during our stream, the checkpointing with that game and some of its campaign moments can be a little frustrating when you feel like you've accomplished a number of things and then you die in a way that feels a little abrupt, and then you're brought back well before any of the things you accomplished. That can be a little trying, but you know, we also got to the point where we finally vanquished that challenge and felt very good about it. It felt very satisfying.
Yeah, I love. So I finished the campaign, and Tinker. There's a mission at the end of the campaign for an exotic. This is my favorite. It's hard to say because you can't go back and replay the other ones. So recency is definitely at play here. But with that in mind, this is my favorite Destiny 2 campaign expansion they've done. It's so tight, which I love. There's no patrol missions. A lot of the other ones, you go out, it's like the mission is, it's kind of like the New World, the ARPG version of New World, where you're doing the MMO grindy thing, but in the main story, it's like, oh, congratulations, Guardian. There's a terrible boss coming. Now go out there and do 4 patrol missions. It's like, I don't want to do 4 patrol. I want to go get the big boss. Yes, but you need to get Ethereum. 100,000 vials of and the final shape has none of that. It is a very linear campaign. In fact, even if you try to leave the campaign and go back to the tower to like decrypt an engram or something like that, you get a little pop-up and it's like, hey, just so you know, we designed the final shape to be played through its entirety. So maybe go back and do that before you jump around to these other little missions. And as a campaign and as a story, I think it's really sweet. It's really heartfelt. You get to see all these characters again that if you've played continuously over the years, you've kind of grown to love. I think I said maybe when Taormina was on. But having finished it now, I want to reiterate this idea that I think the characters all have really special character moments. It does the thing where it gives them each time to shine within the narrative and have a really cool moment of reflection and what the Traveler means to them and what the threat of the Witness is and what they're fighting to defend is really, really cool. And just top to bottom, just a home run of a campaign. My only nit is what you mentioned, Jeff, is the idea of it still very much has these, you've entered an area where you can't respawn. And I kind of get that from a stakes perspective, but it is very frustrating. The final boss was my least favorite part. I think the final boss had four or five different stages, so to speak, where it introduces more raid-like style things. So it's not just empty clips into boss until it's done. You empty clip into boss to get him a quarter of the way through, and then you need to go, you know, light these torches. But before you can light these torches, you need to take down part of these ads. And these ads give you a thing. So it gives you these things to do that are really
steps.
Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes require a little bit of figuring out. Like in the VOD, Jeff, we're like, oh, why is his shield back up? What happened? And it takes a little bit of, process that. And the final boss, it had a lot of those. And I got killed a lot. Especially toward the end where you
have
the shield.
Because you didn't have me carrying you the whole time.
I didn't have you as chum in the water to go get that guy. Go attack this guy. Let me do the work.
I'm falling off of things.
Take the enemies with you. But just really, really awesome. And then the last thing I'll say about this and Alan Wake 2, I played a lot of both of these via GeForce Now. That tech continues to get better and better and better. I played a lot of the final shape with my backbone via GeForce Now with a 5G connection, and I was taking down bosses, no problem. It's really, really impressive. If you haven't tried GeForce Now's cloud gaming in a while, I think they have day passes, so you can just try it for a day and see if you like it. That plus cloud saves, I love. So yeah, I was blunt. Final Shape. Easy to recommend the Final Shape just as a campaign experience if you've lapsed on Destiny. Since then, the rest of the stuff, I don't know if I'll stick with, because that then you have to worry about what type of build you want to do and chasing this exotic, and that usually doesn't work for me long term. But the campaign is awesome, truly epic.
Yeah, as the aforementioned lapsed Destiny player, and couldn't be more of a casual Destiny player, in so much so that I don't really have any ties to these characters. So when character shows up and is like, "Hey, I'm back," I'm like, "I don't." Okay, you're back. Cool, dude. I will say, you know, it's a fun game. It's a fun game. It's a very pretty game for one that is ostensibly so old. Destiny 2 came out, 2017? They've done wonderful things on the back end, making it really feel like a contemporary game, and looks spectacular, plays fun. And it's very overwhelming, the number of systems that are there in the game, as somebody that just hasn't been paying attention to this series in any kind of real way. But you can ignore it almost completely. You could just jump in, play on normal, have a good time, point your gun at the bad guy, shoot, get a new gun, see how that one shoots, have a good time. And I think that's kind of cool that it works on that level as well. It's still real fun on that level. So Destiny 2, The Final Shape, you know, pretty fun if you're looking for a shooter campaign, especially one you can enjoy with some buddies. All right, let's jump into what is really one of my favorite times of the year, and it happens multiple times a year, but it is just a delight. Steam Next Fest. As I said at the top, I think there was
because there aren't too many games the rest of the year.
Yeah, exactly. It's the too many games fest. Over 1,800 demos, evidently, in the Steam Next Fest. So I played a tiny fraction of those, but I also played a huge amount of demos. And I wanted to mention a number. Christian wanted to mention a number, so I thought we'd ping pong back and forth. Imran, I don't know if you played any demos for Steam Next Fest, but you're welcome to join in on the fun if you're.
I'm interested to hear about quite a few of these, actually. But
awesome. Yeah. So Christian, why don't I start? I'll start with the game that I couldn't stop. I wouldn't shut up about last week, and my game of show from SGF, because. Christian, your game of show, you got to play immediately. I got to play my game of show immediately, too, in demo form. And that is Arranger, a role-puzzling adventure, which lived up to all of my hopes. This is an incredibly clever indie game where the entire world exists on a grid. If you can imagine those old, like maybe, I don't know if everybody's grandma, but my grandma certainly gifted me. It's a little picture, but it's cut into squares and you can slide them. There's one space missing and you can slide them around. Kind of like that, where you can slide vertically or horizontally. Ontologically, I think that's called. Anyway, it's the entire universe is like that. And you're a little character. So when you want to move anywhere, you're literally shifting the entire row or the entire column and everything that's on it to the left or right of you or above or below you, respectively. So you are literally moving the world and other characters and other things around as you move around and sort of shifting the relative positions of everything in the world. And therein lies the gameplay. That is the entire notion, is how do I get from here to there by shifting things and moving things if I need also this thing to be here or there. And oftentimes there will be things that prevent you from moving. There'll be certain items that can't be moved or that'll hit the wall if you move them too far in one direction or another. Or there will be a geometry of the level that forces you to not move a certain direction or whatever. The puzzles are extremely smart. That was my biggest hope, is that it wasn't just going to be a sort of sleepwalk through it. This is, there were a couple of real head scratchers for me that I ended up in the demo figuring out and just feeling very satisfied in how I got to the conclusion and how much they're able to mine from a very simple premise. Also, the game's beautiful. I love the art style. It's vibrant. It's cute, but it's also really detailed, and it uses my super ultra wide monitor. A lot of these demos did, by the way. I was very pleased to see that. So I have only positive things to say about Arranger, a role puzzling adventure, which is very much at the top of my wish list for when it comes out, I think later this year. All right, Christian, you're up.
Kill Knight, which I think I mentioned last week or 2 weeks ago as it was kind of shown to be one of the Next Fest demos. Kill Knight is a bullet hell type game. The demo really only had one level or environment where it's kind of a bullet hell, but maybe meets Geometry Wars in the sense that your environment is constrained. It's top down. And instead of going left to right like you would in a bunch of shmup style bullet hells, you're on this environment where you're moving around on a constrained platform or level. And what I really love about Kill Knight is it really does the Doom 2016, the Doom reboot style of push and pull of every attack does helps you in some other way. So you're using all of your abilities. You have a dash that allows for temporary invulnerability to kind of move through areas and get through a bunch of bullets and stuff like that. But then you have a base gun, a sword, a shotgun, and this is just in the demo. I'd imagine it opens up after this. And I think like two other supers that kind of unlock as you do them. And it's you use your I'm going to get this wrong. This isn't exactly right. But it's the idea of you use the sword to kill enemies and that gives you shotgun ammo. Using your shotgun ammo to kill enemies, that recharges your super. You use your base gun to kill enemies to get this other. So you're needing to use all of your abilities. Mm-hmm. And then when the enemies die, they drop these red orbs that can be used to level up some of your abilities. But if you hit, I think it's a shoulder button, you can draw them to you. And when you draw them to you, that powers up something else. So it really becomes a game where you feel like you're playing piano, you know, at a concert hall, and you can't look at your hands. You just need to trust they're doing the right thing. And it takes a while to get into that flow state. But when you do, it's really, really cool because there's, you don't always want to use your main gun, or sometimes using your sword is harder because you have to rush into the enemy to do that, whereas you want to keep space otherwise. And so if those mechanics continue to evolve and play out over the course of a full game, I think Kill Knight could be something really special. I was really pleased to see someone take that idea and put it in a different genre of game. It also has what's essentially an active reload. Mm-hmm. And Alex Solman and I on an episode of Feeling This, I think it was in season two, we talked about that being a woefully underused mechanic because it's such an active way to allow the player to feel empowered with a minimal punishment when you miss it. But yeah, when you get it, it feels so good. And it was awesome to see that in Kill Knight as well. Really, really fun idea. And it tells you up front, difficult. It's like, yeah, this is not an easy game. We recommend you do all the tutorials first, which is cool.
Next game up for me is called Dungeons of Hinterberg. And this is Leave the Hinterberg, I would always tell people. this is a game I've had my eye on for a while since it was announced, I think last year at some point. It has a wonderful art style that reminds me of Rollerdrome and some other games. This sort of nouveau cell shading look that's become kind of in vogue with a lot of indie games. I think it really works here for Dungeons of Hinterberg. This is a third person action adventure game. One of the things I really like about it is that there's magic and fantasy elements and stuff, but it takes place in a sort of modern world. There's helicopters and, you know, it's now for all intents and purposes, but there's also kind of magic in it. And I don't think that is used enough, I think, as a setting. I love that element. Everybody kind of does the Tolkien thing or whatever, or you're in the future. But I love that this is kind of feels like you're just like a backpacking person now that also can do fantastical things and has to sometimes fight demon trolls, you know? It's neat. And it's got this kind of wonderful back and forth between a fantastical hack and slashy kind of thing. You're going to be, you know, whacking enemies and doing super moves and all that kind of stuff. But also there's moments where you're just sitting at the cafe having a conversation with another backpacker that's going through this cool kind of European, beautiful countryside. The demo has a level that's kind of at the top of this ski resort mountain, and you unlock a hoverboard that you can call at any time. and then you can grind rails, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog style through it. Super fun. Super fun. I'm digging Dungeons of Hinterberg. I think this bodes very, very well for its release, which is not very far off. A game that I've been looking forward to, and I think the demo made me reinforce my optimism for how good it's going to come out.
That's awesome. I have two that I want to call out that I didn't love, but I want to call them out for specific reasons because I've talked about them before. And the first is Flintlock, The Siege of Dawn, which was shown at SGF or one of those presentations around that week. And I thought it looked really cool. We talked about like, oh, does that art style work? Or it did like the heavy titles that kind of came in and looked gritty. And it just didn't click with me. It felt like, and this is just a demo, a Steam Next Fest demo, but it felt like it wasn't tight enough to be the style of game that it wants to be, which is parry mechanicked combat where you have a little gun to cancel enemies out of animations. And it feels trite to say souls, like I'll say souls adjacent within a sphere of soul style combat encounters. And everything just felt a little less than. The audio wasn't quite bombastic enough. You're supposed to be in this huge war when it starts. The animations felt a little stilted. It just didn't quite seem to hit all those notes. So I wanted to bring that up just because after the trailer, I thought it looked really good. And going hands-on with it in this demo, I'm a little less excited for that game than I was before.
Oh, what's the other one?
The other one is Test Drive Unlimited Solar Crown, which I think I talked about whenever that trailer was first out. I think it had been much delayed. I love the old Test Drive games. I was excited to see this game come back. And maybe I'm being petty. This required a creation of an account to play a demo. And that is an immediate nope from me. Like, yeah. I get a hard lock screen that's like, welcome to our demo. Sign up, agree to this 100-page EULA and create an account for our thing that you don't have. No, not going to happen.
So you didn't even take it for a test drive, this test drive?
I did not. I went to the dealership and I asked for the keys and they said no. And I said, all right, fair enough. It bums me out, man. Maybe I'm being petty, but I wanted to talk about it.
I've done that a few times with demos as well. They're like, hey, sign up. And I'm like, hey, no, there's 400,000 other demos.
Exactly. I moved right to the next one. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
I'll talk about a game that really impressed me. It's called Blueprints. Blueprints, but it's supposed to be also Blueprints because it's about you play as a person who has inherited their rich uncle's, I don't even know, it's uncle, grandfather's, anyway, your rich relative's estate, going to give you this massive mansion. But there is one catch. You have to solve the riddle inside. It's a Brewster's Millions type situation where the final will and testament has stipulations and you must go into this thing and figure out the secret in order to prove your worth and inherit the massive mansion and its fortune.
Little do my kids know, I have a 100-hour D&D campaign for them to complete before they get anything.
Yeah. My kids just have to finish Lorelei and the Laser Eyes.
It only takes a good 7-8 years for them. It's fine.
Anyway, I thought it was a fun premise. This is a first-person puzzle game that uses board game mechanics that I've seen many, many times in board games and rarely have seen brought into video game form. And that is selection really is what it is, in the style of something like Betrayal on House on the Hill, which is a, you know, popular board game that people might know, where, you know, on your turn, you pick up another room of the castle and place it on the board when you're playing Betrayal at House on the Hill. And now you're sort of constructing the mansion in real time. And it's different every time you play. That is also the conceit of Blueprints, in that every time you walk through a door in the mansion, you are selecting among three options as to what that room will be. And part of the puzzle is not only what's inside the room, which are bespoke little puzzles that you may need, you know, remember something from over here and use it from there, or find a key in this thing that you can bring to another place. But also the layout that you're constructing of how doors feed into other doors is its own little puzzle that you need to be aware of, because if you create a situation where you have no more doors to walk through to add new rooms and you haven't solved the mystery, you're stuck and you have to start the day over again, roguelite style, where now you're starting and you walk into the mansion fresh and all the doors are blank, and you still have the rooms that you have discovered, but you have a completely blank blueprint as the blueprints. I think this game is really clever. It's really fun. I wasn't really able to dig too far into the complexity of the meta puzzle and the each room puzzles, but there, you know, as you go into the room, the rooms often are their own little mini puzzle, and you're like, okay, well, how do I do this to unlock that? Or there'd be cool word puzzles, logic puzzles inside the rooms that I found. So really, really cool. Kind of reminds me of The Witness a bit, which is one of my all-time fave games. This, I think, looks really special. Blueprints.
My favorite of the games that I played, and you texted me to bring this one to my attention because there are too many, Phantom Spark. Phantom Spark is a wipeout fusion, that the racing vroom vroom wipeout, not the silly obstacle course reality TV show.
Although, are they that different?
Very similar. They both take place in the future and you throw things at people. But this is Phantom Spark. And from the demo, it really feels like inspired by those wipeout games in terms of the tracks that you're on, the way you're kind of air breaking your way through them. And it kind of tweaks that approach a little bit in that you are pretty much only competing against yourself. The way the progression of the demo worked is you would do the course yourself first. And then after that, after you completed the course, you would race it against like the course's champion and I think your ghost. And if you could unlock that, it kind of progresses you through going faster and getting faster times that way, which I think is a super cool and interesting approach, instead of just saying 2 minutes is bronze, 150 is silver, 140 is gold. Are you going to chase the gold? And it's just literally a time on your screen. I think there's something very compelling of the way this uses the ghost technique from Mario Kart that people will probably know, of trying to pull you forward and to give you something else to chase, also without doing 8 ships on a track, which are getting in your way and sometimes can feel unfair because they're rubber banding in a way that doesn't seem right, or they take out you but not the ship next to you. And so this didn't have weapons or anything like that, which the wipeout games are known for. But in terms of feel and speed, it's very reminiscent of that. And then it also uses your momentum to increase your speed. It feels kind of Sonic the Hedgehog in that way, that if you hit a wall, not only does it slow you down from the impact of the wall, but then your momentum has kind of reset also. And without that, by the end of the tracks, you are just whipping along. So it kind of creates this, you're getting nervous because you're in the front or you're going to get the win, but also you're going faster than you've ever gone. So you have to be smarter with your turns and your decisions. Phantom Spark is really fun. It really kind of nails that wipeout zone mode approach, I guess, is a mode from Wipeout that maybe is most similar to this. But loved this demo. Thank you for pointing it out, Jeff. I think it's something really special for Wipeout folks to keep an eye out for.
Right on. Yeah, it sounded like it was something right up your alley. I think they described it, the devs describe it as Wipeout meets Trackmania.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I think you can. Can you build tracks? I forget if not. But yeah, it's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah. Okay, we only have a few more here. I played many, many, many and could talk for a long, long time, but I'm trying to just pick the cream of the crop. Really interesting game called Beyond Galaxy Land. This is made by a single developer, which absolutely blows my mind because there's so much to this game. It has ambitions, and it's hard to know from a demo how close it gets to these ambitions, but it's impressive that it's on display at all. But it has ambitions of being a two-dimensional pixel art Mass Effect. But also Pokemon. It's a wild thing beyond Galaxy Land. You are, and it's kind of got this humorous world. You're on a ship. You can go from planet to planet. There's planets that are completely optional, that they have their own mini quests that are just on that planet. There's multiple places you can land on a planet. And when you get off, you're in, and by the way, the visualizations of it all is very, very cool because it's almost like pixel art put into a 3D renderer so that when you're moving your ship, there's these 2D things that you can pass by, like you're passing by a 2D plane in 3D. Very, very cool stuff. But then when you land on a planet, you're in a 2D side-scrolling adventure thing. You can take photos of creatures that you find. You can tame them. And you've got this party, and you get into turn-based battles where you can do summons and all kinds of, you know, turn-based RPG type stuff. Visually, really spectacular. I think this game is really one to look out for. And again, one person made it, which is just staggering, the level of complexity and the art assets and just how much seems to be in this game when it finally launches. It's called Beyond Galaxy Land.
It takes more people to make this podcast, and this podcast is way less advanced than that game.
Yes, far less interesting on every level.
The last one I want to call out, you also had texted to me, but I also already had on my radar, G.I. Joe Wrath of Cobra. It is a brawler in the style of the old Ninja Turtle arcade games or Streets of Rage 4 or the more recent Turtles game as well. As a brawler, I think from what they showed in the demo, G.I. Joe Wrath of Cobra falls short. It feels very basic. Again, the animations, it seems like you go into jump and then you have one pose for that whole jump and then you land and you don't have necessarily the move complexity of what Streets of Rage 4 brought to the table. It feels from the demo the equivalent to the Space Jam 2 brawler that was released for free as a movie tie-in. And I think I talked about that game on this show being like, this is a free movie tie-in game and it's a pretty good, you know, quarter eater brawler. Like it does what it does, right? It's nothing fancy. And that's what G.I. Joe Wrath of Cobra feels like on the demo, is nothing fancy. But the reason I want to bring it up is what it nails 11 out of 10, 15 out of 10 is that 80s cartoon G.I. Joe. It starts with the theme song. You are playing as all the characters you know and love. They're pixel art. It looks great. It sounds cool. And if you are a G.I. Joe kid, I think this has to go onto the top of your list. Again, not because it's the best modern brawler made or released, it seems, based on this demo, but because it's perfectly serviceable and it's all your favorite toys. And sometimes that is good enough. And G.I. Joe,
sometimes you just want a thing that makes sounds at you that you recognize.
Yes. Yes. And you want them to be the characters you know and love, and not,
and knowing, you know, is like, half the battle.
Yes. Yes. It's like, why am I playing as the Rock version of it's the movie one, you know? Like this just does it. It is the cartoon, and yes, please.
So that's G.I. Joe Wrath of Cobra. I just have a couple of others I want to mention. One is the third game that I texted to you, I guess didn't make your list at all, is called Pinball Spire, which is basically what if a roguelite, but pinball. And I know Christian loves pinball, so I thought maybe you'd check this out. There was a game that both...
I was too busy not signing up for an account to play Solar Crown.
I hear you. You're sitting at the screen just fuming for hours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was this game, and you're going to have to help me remember the name of it, a Switch game that came out a couple years ago. And by a couple, I mean, who knows? It could be anywhere to 10 to 5. I don't know. But that was a pinball RPG on Switch. Remember, you were like a little bug moving this ball
around.
Yoku's
Island Express.
Thank you. Yeah. Such a great game, that game. Loved that game. So in that sense, this isn't a completely original idea. But also, Pinball Spire, based on the demo, doesn't play anything like Yoku's Island Express. Very different take on the same, I think, novel idea, which is, what if pinball is the fundamental mechanic, fundamental gaming experience inside a much more complex game. With Pinball Spire, you're literally like having screens of full-on pinball. It doesn't attempt to mask the pinballness inside an adorable world like the other game did. But what it is doing is linking these pinball, you know, these individual screens of pinball to each other. So if you shoot your ball out through one hole, it'll like move you into another self-contained pinball set, which I thought was pretty cool. And there's power-ups and cool things you can do. It's pixel art. It seemed like something that would be right up your alley, Christian. And I thought it was kind of neat. It's Pinball Spire. And then the last one I want to mention is just a game that took me by surprise because I haven't played any of the other games in this franchise, and I'm not drawn to it because I'm not a cat person, frankly. I thought it was kind of one of those just cozy. There's just a whole range of cat games for cat people, and I think that's fine. No judgment from me. I'm just not one. So anything that's like cat, I'm like, I mean, I played Stray and that was fun, but there's cat stuff is just like, I'm not drawn to it. So Cat Quest has never been something I took a look at. I downloaded the demo for Cat Quest 3, and I got to say, this game's cool. I think it's cool. It's got a little bit of coziness to it. It's very jokey, very puns with cats, and every character is a cat pun, and that's fine. It's fun. What I'm so taken by with it is the art direction, which is totally cool and unique. And if you've seen any of the videos for Cat Quest, I don't know if this is throughout the series or if it's just this iteration of it, because I haven't played any of the previous ones, but you're basically playing on a map. Like, you are playing the game, like you'll fight things and you'll get in your ship and you'll move, but you're on a map, on what, you know, it's got, the sea has words written on it, you know, the land has directions drawn on it. You're on a map, and then there's stuff that kind of pops up in three dimensions off the map. And the thing that's cool is that it's kind of an isometric game, but the camera is so low down that you're looking across the map. And so you see awesome stuff in the distance popping up off that two-dimensional map as well. And the sea and all this, the draw distance is really awesome. And you're going around, you're smacking stuff and you're shooting your cannons and you're getting into fights. And then you'll find a cave or something or a city and you'll go into that and then it'll kind of zoom in. So I love games with multiple layers of size and scale. I don't know what it is about that, but I love that when you're like, I'm on this scale and now I zoom in and now I'm on this scale and then I get into a fight and now I'm on this scale. And this game does that as well. And it's just really pretty. And I love the art, and it's fun. It's kind of light, but there's a lot it seems to do and cool little places to explore. And there's just a sense of discovery because you're literally, you see something in the distance. You're like, oh, I wonder what that is. And you can sail over to it and get into a little ship-to-ship fight on the way and plunder some cool loot and get a cool new item and put that on your character and then arrive at this fun little place and discover something. It's just, it's got all those little things that I like. I was very impressed with Cat Quest 3, so wanted to mention it. Tons of other games we could talk about, but that'll have to be the end of the Steam Next Fest Demo Fest for Summer Game Fest in Fest 24. Fest. And also, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Huge thanks to Imran Khan for being here. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me. I'm always a pleasure.
Well, we love chatting with you. Tell folks where they can find out more about what you do online.
Currently, I'm mostly just freelancing, so if you see any of the major game sites, I am probably on it in some way. But if you want to find me on Twitter, if you want to find me on Twitter, it's at Imran ZUMG. But if you want to find me on Blue Sky, it's imrankhan.bsky.social, I believe is the way those usernames work. Go there. But also, if you've been seeing that people close to me have had like problems recently with certain other people, what we're doing is, if you want to speak up and support, it's very nice to be, you know, say nice things to her and all that. But what we're saying is, go to Trans Lifeline and give them like $25 or something. That's how we're showing support for our community and the people around us too. So
that's great.
That's what we recommend.
Trans Lifeline. That's wonderful. Wonderful way to show support and solidarity. And sorry that you are going through that. But that's a great way, folks. Hopefully folks will rally around that cause as well. Christian Spicer, what do you got going on this week?
Well, or they can choose to get a new stratagem. That's the other option, is that you can choose a new stratagem. It's a cool one.
Make the right choice.
Yeah, make the right choice. Don't get a new stratagem. I have been remiss to mention that this show, we're on the Fediverse. I think it's a Fedi, not Feedy, Fediverse. We're on Threads.
Yeah, federated, as yeah, yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah. So it's probably pronounced the Jifiverse, I think is how the creator is going to say how you pronounce it 30 years from now.
Yeah.
We're on Threads and Instagram as DLC Hype Train, and Threads is plugged into the Fediverse. And so we are on the Fediverse. Listeners asked, like, hey, will you activate that? And I was like, I don't know how to do that. I learned how to do it. It was very easy. So you can find us there as well. I don't know if the handle's different or not, but we are there. And I love the idea of the Fediverse and what it brings to democratized social media sharing, I think is very cool. And then on Instagram, again, which is DLC Hype Train, and then on our YouTube, which is at DLC Pod, Jeff, you and I have started putting out 1 to 2 a week, 1 minute short little stingers, hot takes, stuff like that, that people have been enjoying. That is exclusive video content to those platforms. So if you need a little itch, pick me up, an itch scratched of 1 minute of Jeff and I saying something. No,
if you want an itch, it is so irritating yeah, to what we're doing.
Yeah.
It's going to feel like this thing you just can't get to on your back, yeah. You know?
If you want a mosquito bite at your ankles, right at your sock line, so it just rubs.
Mosquito bite of content is what this is. Just,
yeah, exactly. So those are on YouTube at DLC Pod or Instagram at DLC Hype Train. Go get bitten. Go.
That's right.
Go get bitten.
DLC stands for your daily lotion, calamine.
Dang little critters.
Oh boy. I'm on the socials as well at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with 2 N's and 1 T. You can hear me talk about movies and TV shows on the Filmcast. I talk science on a show, a funny comedy show called We Have Concerns. And I'm doing sports talk on a show called The Fan Controlled Show, all of which are available wherever you get podcasts and on video platforms as well. So check those out. All right. Let's wrap up the show now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
Imran, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Yeah, so when my wife was like out at Summer Games Fest before I was, so I spent those couple of days eating very badly and watching YouTube. A thing I discovered is a YouTube channel called The Real Jims, J-I-M-S, which was, they do like long form investigation into Simpsons theories, and it's weirdly compelling. I don't know why it is. They like go into like history of like, here's what we think about the Ralphs of that's where I'm a Viking line, or like long investigations into certain characters.
Hey, sleep. That's where I'm a Viking.
That's the line. And weirdly, yeah. There's a huge schism about it of people who think like he dreams of he's being a Viking. People who think that's where he's best. That's why he says he's a Viking. And there's like a 20-minute video on it.
Amazing.
And so like it's stuff like that that is like I don't always agree with the guy, but it's interesting entertainment, so I'm recommending people watch it.
All right, I'm gonna have to absolutely check this out. The Real Jims sounds like my jam. 100%. The Real Jims YouTube account, Imran's parting gift. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
Also available on YouTube. I was talking about Wipeout earlier. Friend of the show Danny over at NoClip, they have a documentary, Wipeout 2097, The Making of an Iconic PlayStation Soundtrack. Love those NoClip documentaries. Love Wipeout. Put them together. It's just like the perfect mosquito bite, you know? Just absolutely. I live for it. But no, Wipeout 2097.
The itch you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Gives me that good itch. Wipeout 2097 and the making of an iconic PlayStation soundtrack. Well worth the time to watch. I loved it.
Very cool. I just checked out a new show. I believe it started its life on Adult Swim, if I want to. And several years ago, I am not aware of this. It just started a new season, which made it pop up on my carousel on, I want to say, Max, the one to watch for HBO. I should probably have more information about this. The show's name is Smiling Friends. And I didn't know what to make of this. It's an animated show, as Adult Swim might imply. This is in the mold of your Rick and Morty's, but even more so, I would say Ren and Stimpy, if you're old school like me, or Aqua Teen Hunger Force. It's a very wacky, irreverent kind of comedy. I found it hilarious. A lot of times these very adult, short attention, man, I'm using that as a lot this week, but there are all these Adult Swim shows that are very kind of, hey, here's a random thing, weird stuff, going to the next one, short attention span, that aren't my jam. This one is my jam. I think the comedy is very, very biting, very funny, very dark.
This was the thing with Gwimbly. Okay, so
the character
named Gwimbly, yes. The thing that is a surprisingly pitch perfect like commentary on N64 mascots.
Yeah, well, they do these things that are almost very subversive and kind of subtle. The all the characters are in the world are drawn in completely different art styles, and they all inter. It's very odd. It's almost like memes come to life. It's a very strange show. It made me laugh. It's called Smiling Friends. We also got a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Anthony from California. Anthony says, I love the podcast. Have been meaning to write in about this JRPG series that is sorely overlooked by many. The JRPG series in question is The Legend of Heroes by developer Nihon Falcom. Probably pronounced that wrong.
I think it's correct.
It is a series of games that is currently 10 games long here in the West, 12 in Japan, that in itself tells one long continuous saga within the world it has created. But within the larger narrative, each individual story is split up over multiple games with different leads. I could write about how amazing the series is and how deep and complex the character building, themes, and general world building are. But mostly, I thought it was funny that this one series had multiple examples of a single story split over several games, which itself is a single story split over multiple games. He was writing in because we were talking about that in reference to Final Fantasy, wondering if that's one of the only games that does that. So Anthony wrote in to tell us about The Legend of Heroes, games I have never played. I don't know if either of you have.
I never played Legend of Heroes. I know some people who are real sickos for them, but the fact that it is that like, you know, long thing has made it so every time I think about it, I get intimidated and don't. I have played the Ease series, which is like the partner series to this one, where like Ease focuses on gameplay and this focuses on story, and like some fans don't like the way they've been exchanging priorities recently. But like I know Nihon Falcon makes good games. I would like to try this at some point, just when I have like 1,000 hours free.
Yeah, whenever you find a spare 1,000 hours lying around. Very cool. Hey, if you'd like to have your parting gift read on our show, we'd love to do it. Send it to us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Imran Khan and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those cool bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can always get swag for this show at our store, which is store.dlcpod.com. Our biggest thanks are always reserved for our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Without those folks supporting us every month, we could not be making the show. You can be one of them and ensure that we get to continue doing this, and you'll get cool stuff by going to patreon.com/DLCpod. Our top tier patrons, our hype train patrons, they become video games. That's right, Christian. It's time to talk about games from the past, games that only we are willing to talk about. only we have the privilege of talking about. You know that game, Alley R3? Remember Alley R3?
A game that I think, unfortunately, is known more for introducing the click R3 button into the vernacular.
Sure.
Which no one enjoys clicking R3. It's never a great interaction. And it stinks because Alley R3 was such an incredibly deep mechanical game and so fun to play. It's like they shoehorned the R3.
Well, that's the problem is now
into the name.
It's so ingrained in me from when I played many, many hours of this game that when I click R3 by accident, as I often do, I call it an alley oops.
What about when you click it on purpose? Is that an alley intentional?
Yeah, that's an alley oop. Whoa.
Yeah, I agree. And also, interestingly enough, people might not remember that Alley R1 and Alley R2 did not have the R3 click. It was not until, coincidentally enough, the third game in the franchise.
Yeah. No, you were clicking L3 in those games, which is super weird.
It was super weird. It made me, because then everybody associates the name with a click, but the name, of course, R stands for rebellion. Yes. And so it was the great, anyway, it doesn't. Everybody remembers the plot of the games. I don't need to belabor the point, but interestingly enough, that kind of people have equivocated R3 with the introduction of the dual analog controllers.
Sure.
And the R3 button press.
Dual alley log controllers.
That's a true story. That's what Jeff calls them. We were at Best Buy probably 5 years ago, and he was like, I need a new dual alley log controller.
You were so embarrassed that the Best Buy employee just not understanding at all what I was saying.
But then that person came from the back and they were like, Alley R3 fan.
We got so many of these in the bin, trade-in bin. Anyway, that's not the only game we need to talk about this week. I also need to talk about, and ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you when I say, this is a classic. J.R.P. Gary. Do you remember J.R.P. Gary? Weird that it wasn't a JRPG.
The first version of Dragon Age Veilguard, right? Of the action. It was DMC before DMC.
JRP Gary. The only reason this franchise is not around today is because people just got confused. They really expected a JRPG from JRP Gary. But it was...
It was a Gary-like. And no one...
Jeep Recon Patrol Gary. It was like Ikari Warriors. It was a top-down bullet hell shooter.
No leveling up.
No,
anything. Not even like
Gary. Jeep Recon Patrol. It was right there in the title. There was periods after each of the words. They just didn't stand for what people wanted them to stand
for.
The
cover art was, Gary in full fatigues, the helmet on and the Jeep in the background. It couldn't have been more clear. And I think the problem was because on the box art, it had like kind of war torn, sometimes comics now they look like old intentionally. And so the period between JR and P were bullet holes.
Yeah.
So people just thought it meant JRPG, but it was actually clearly Jeep Recon Patrol.
Sure.
Gary with the bullet holes for the acronym.
We were savvy to that, but the average customer weren't as connected as we were. Not since D and Dave has there been a more confusing.
Also confusing about JRP Gary is that it did come out in Japan first. It was of that era where games. Yeah. So everybody was clearly this is a JRPG.
Yeah. And in Japan, they just called it RP Gary.
I thought it was just called Gary. Yeah, I never imported it. I always wanted to.
Anyway, we're delighted that we're able to talk about these old games that nobody talks about. The only reason is because folks support us at the hype train level, at DLC Pod, or excuse me, at patreon.com/DLC Pod. You can be one of them. You could support us. It would be so appreciated. Head over there now and become immortalized as a video game. All right. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints. Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.